Accession number 23187, Reel 1.
Mr. John Ashcombe, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Ashcombe?
Yes, I was born on the 21st of April 1925 in Hackney. And
could you tell us a bit about your family background and sort of the conditions in which you grew up?
Oh.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a commercial traveller. My mother, as most of them were in those days, was a housewife. And we lived next door to my grandmother.
And were you reasonably off? Was your father's... I mean, did he bring in plenty of money? Enough
well,
money?
I wouldn't say he brought in plenty of money, but we never wanted for anything or needed for anything, whichever the appropriate term was, you know.
Did you have any others in the family, any brothers and sisters?
No, it was just me and them.
And what about school? To get to us a bit about your education.
Yes, well, I went to a certain... elementary school. We didn't go to nursery schools in those days. In Wilton Road, as it was known at the time, and it was later renamed Wilton Way. And I don't remember too much about those school days, although I had the odd picture of a clock on the wall. And
Did you do well at school? That's me. I mean, what any
average.
Particular subjects you liked?
Well, from the elementary school days, I would say average, very average. Then when we moved,
Where did you move to? Still in Hackney? Or?
No, Hyde Park Avenue, Winchmore Hill. And I then carried on my schooling at Raglan. And Raglan. Yes, I don't think there was anything special about that. Only that one of my friends from those school days was shot down after a raid over Germany. He crashed in flames in a place up in Worcester somewhere.
Now, and again, not you were just average at school.
Oh, yes, in those days. It wasn't until I passed my 11 plus and then I went to Latimer School in Edenton, which, of course, is part of the Latimer Foundation, which was founded in 1624.
Now, what was that like, attending that school?
It's a very good school. I was... my pet subject was German there, and music. I used to sing in the junior boys' choir, and we used to go into competition sort of thing, but as we were at the only... shall we say, the only choir in the area, we had to score a certain amount of points to win, which we always did. And then when the war came, I thought...
Hang on a minute. So, did you have any particular hobbies at the time? Well, music, but, I mean, you know, were you in the Boy Scouts?
No, not at that time. I was in the Boys Brigade.
What did you do with them? What sort of activities?
Much about.
What did they organise for you? And how military was it in those days? Because it was sometimes...
Well, it was quite military. I was in the drill squad, and we did a bit of this where we didn't have to wait for the next command, you know. Not a lot, you know. Well, after all, we were only 12, 13. And... I also went a couple of years to camp over at Benbridge on the Isle of Wight.
What were the camps like?
Bell tents, and the conveniences were in the hedge, in a dug trench. So anything that might have come later, I was well prepared for. And...
Now, as a boy, you know, young lad growing up, were you aware of what was going on? You were only 13, 14. Were you aware of what was going on in Germany about the rise of Hitler, Nazis, things like that?
Well, while I was... I was 3 years at Latimer, and a lot of us had pen friends. And my pen friend's father was the mayor of Ulm, ULM. And one of the other school kids there, she had her pen friend over. And I remember we all used to gather in a park over in, a small park, over in Bushell Park. And I remember those quite well. As far as was I aware of what was going on, I don't think I could reasonably say I was, because I was getting the nice side from my pen friend, in spite of the fact that he sent me a photograph with a swastika on his arm. And so I remember Munich sort of thing, and that's when we started thinking. And so, of course, there was no interchange in 39. It had gone too far by that time.
Now, what do you remember of the actual outbreak of war? Were you just about to start your next term? I mean, were you still at school at that time, or did you just...
No. My parents and I decided that as I had a bit of a penchant for German, a family friend was on the international correspondence side on Germany in the post office, and it was suggested that I went for a test, you know, to see if I had the usual civil service, or what is known as a civil service test. But of course, with the outbreak of war, they were all stopped.
Now, do you remember the outbreak of war?
I certainly do. That is one thing that really stands out in my memory.
Tell us about it. In which detail do you remember that?
I'd had a very nice fortnight's holiday up at Goulston at a holiday camp. I would say it was slightly better than Butlin's. And it was there, because I had been learning piano from the old family retainer for a few years, and then when we moved I found another one locally. But I didn't seem, you know, it was a case of, yes, the current one then was putting me through for music exams, whereas the other one was just sort of teaching me to play. And there was a five-piece band, or a four-piece band, I think. The Heard Brothers blew four, so I suppose there were four of them, and I might have been a sextet, is it? And that's when my interest started in playing in bands. And, of course, then the war came.
So what happened, Dolly? You were telling me what happened.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
This is what my memory does go off at terrible tangents. We'd had this nice fortnight's holiday, and we came back on the Saturday before war was declared on the Sunday. And normally we go up the A10 and shoot across on the 505 and pick up the A11, which is the way I've always gone up there to this day. I still go up there. And we got to... Oh, it was more or less the big, you call it the beginning, the end, the Cambridge arterial. When you were coming back into town, that split into two. One stayed on the A10 and the other filtered down through Waltham Cross and all that sort of thing. And because they were evacuating at the time, excuse me, because they were evacuating at the time, coming out of town, they were coming out on the A10. So we had to go down through Hartford Road and all that sort of thing. And then, of course, we woke up on the Sunday morning, and who was it? Chamberlain, was it? I haven't heard from Mr. Hitler. That was after the Munich thing. So we are at a state of war, and that was how we were bounced into war.
How did you feel about it yourself and your parents? How did they react?
Well, it stopped me getting on with my career in as much as I wanted to go on to foreign correspondence. So I had to have a fill-in job, shall we say, before I went into a stockbroker's.
What was a fill-in job?
I was a barrow boy in Clingers, the silk stocking factory. That's what they offered me at the unemployment exchange when I said I was waiting to hear for an exam to go in the post office. Didn't last that long.
Did you enjoy the work in the factory?
Not particularly. It was a job. It was my first job, you know, and you got to know one or two. You used to sort of push barrows of silk stockings around, you know. And
then your next job?
I was a clerk in the stockbrokers.
Now, what were your duties as a clerk?
Well, I guess you could say I was a messenger boy. I don't remember much of the paperwork. There was two of us started at the same time and they seemed to be pushing the other one, whose name eludes me, but that makes no odds. And I think I was there for a year.
What, 39 through to 40?
No, this would be 40 because I left school July the 28th. I remember that quite well because I used to know a chap that lived down in Edmonton and I...
Hang on, yeah. So we've sort of gone past that a bit. So you were working as a stockbroker. Now, what effects did the war have on your day-to-day life when the bombing started and things? What about air raid precautions? Did you have a shelter at your home?
Yeah, the stairs. No, we didn't have an Anderson shelter or a Morrison shelter. And they wouldn't let me be evacuated because they said if we are going to go, we'll all go together. So I used to have to sleep under the stairs.
Did that worry you when the bombing started?
I would say not. What used to keep me awake, though, was the... we had some big guns over on what was the golf course at the back of the house. Well, the immediate back was the cemetery, and then beyond that was the golf course, and they installed all these big guns. And, of course, when they went off, the room was lit up like day. And, of course, quite a crunch when they went off. And that was it. But although we heard the bombs coming down and the mortar rattling down between the walls, I wouldn't say it... affected me that much. I used to go dancing in the evening.
What about the blackout? Were you aware? I mean, how was it done in your home? And also, what effect did it have on the streets?
Well, my dad made little things to fit into the windows, and that was it.
So it was easy.
It was comparatively easy, yeah.
And what was it like outdoors? Well, you know, when you went out during a blackout, was it a strange effect?
Well, you had to have a torch. But having said that, as at such times when I was on, I was up in Galston actually the last fortnight of the war, and we were out in a little village where there were no street lights anyway.
So back in 1940. So what was your daily routine like? You know, as a young lad working at the stockbrokers, 41.
Well, I'd get up in the morning. And this, of course, was in Moorgate. And
the stockbrokers was?
Yes. And I went up one morning, and, of course, there was a big hole outside the Bank of England. So you had to walk all the way round there. But, of course, also, by that time, they'd all started sleeping in the tubes. So you go down the tube and the air was pretty thick and you didn't have much room to walk along the platform to where you wanted to get on your car.
That's how you got to work, by tube, was it?
Bus and tube.
Well, was transport much affected on a daily basis by the bombing, would you say?
I don't think I was affected at that time. You see, this would be 40 through to 41. Only it seems longer than a year, you know, but... I can't say I was greatly affected. Inconvenienced, yes, but Not affected. I don't think I ever had to wait 2 hours for a train and things like that.
Now, what about the one thing before we go to the other thing? Rationing, did that affect too much? Food and clothes rationing?
I don't think we worried about it too much. Obviously, you had to watch the coupons and you couldn't just dive out and buy stuff as and when you wanted it. But I don't think it worried me that much. I know when I was with the stockbrokers, one of the guys there, that was at the time when they had very outlandish ties, which of course they've got that way again, and I managed to acquire one. How I acquired it, I don't know. It wasn't bought, it was an exchange thing. And ultimately it disappeared, but they were the ties, sort of ties, that Jimmy Edwards once referred to as sunset down a tomato mine. And so from that side, well, they're things you didn't worry about. I think your mother and father used to keep the ration books and the clothing coupons, and as long as you could get out dancing at night, that was the... And of course, in those days, coming back from Southgate for Winchmore Hill, I used to cut through Grovelands Park. You know, 11, 12 o'clock at night, the park was always open. There were no foot pads or anything like that in those days.
Now, what you mentioned dancing, you mentioned it a couple of times. What were the dances like? Who organised them and what were they like when you...
Well, it was the Royalty, it was a... it was a normal band. They did the usual things. Actually...
Hang on. You see, people don't know now.
No, I was going into that. Actually, I think it was run by a local estate agent. Although it was purely a dance hall at that time. It might have been a church thing years ago. And... it was the usual sort of quick step, foxtrot and waltz with the odd tango and rumba, but they didn't allow jiving up there at that time. You know, you could get away with it in some places, but you couldn't get away with it up there. And
what sort of a band would it be? What would the typical band be made up of?
Piano, bass, drums, trumpet and saxophone. I don't remember the exact line-up, although I used to know them over a period of time. And, of course, in later times, I adapted up there.
Now, one thing about... was a big American influence, you know, this jiving and things like that, or was...
Well,
that,
it was kept right down.
Why?
Well, it could get a bit... apart from the sort of, well, I would say a sexy side, but there again, a tango is a very sexy dance. But it used to get quite physical. They swing their partners around everywhere. They throw them over their heads and slide them between their legs, you know. So it could get dangerous, and then of
course... Was that the sort of thing that the young people like you wanted to do, though? I mean, would you have wanted to do sort of more American-based stuff or jiving, or were you happy with what you got?
Well, we didn't know too much about the American side of things. You know, we used to get the records over here, but, well, I was never a great dancer, frankly, you know. I used to follow the bands around... But, I say, most of the local halls, they banned it anyway.
So you were more keen on the music than the dancing?
Oh, yes. The music and the ladies.
So that was your motivation, yeah. You know.
What are the birds like, Mush?
What about drinking? I mean, would there be drink at these...
Oh, yes, there was a fully licensed bar there. And that was it. If you found somebody you... fancied, you'd ask them up in the bar for a drink.
And so you drank. Did you drink much in that?
Not to excess, well. How much money would I have as a 15, 16-year-old lad? Of course, it got a bit better and up to when I was 18.
Now, So that was sort of how your routine, your stockbroker, your dance, you know, dance bands and the rest of it. How did things change as the war years went on? Because you weren't called up until 1943, so no, things well, changed. But just
well, the next 2 years after the stockbrokers, I was working at Barclays Bank.
As a bank clerk?
Yeah.
What did that involve?
Learning banking. How to set down on paper all the transactions that come in. The cashiers would take them in and shove them in your basket at the back, and then you'd have this massive sheet of paper called the waste, which had to be set out in a certain way, and at the end of the day you balance. Basically, it's one of those marvellous little phrases that so many get out. The cash in plus last night's balance should equal the cash out plus tonight's balance. And it's those things like your number, rank and name in the service, especially if you go on in that sort of sphere.
Why do you switch from the stockbrokers, clerk, or messenger?
Well, I think it was travelling up and, you know, the travel every day. And I thought it would have been a better job for me.
Did you enjoy it more?
I didn't have to catch public transport. I used to go up on my bike.
This is a local branch?
Yeah, up at Muswell Hill. And funnily enough, one of my musician friends at the time, he was working at in the same bank at Southgate by Waterfall Lane. Not Chaseside, High Street branch, I think.
So that's what you were doing. Now, were you ever a member of any of the voluntary organisations like the ARP or...
No. I was in the ATC.
Which stands for?
Air Training Corps. That was after it ceased to be the Air Defence Cadet Corps.
And what did you do with the air training? That
was number 17F up at the Enfield Grammar School, which is another...
What did F stand for?
Founder. They gave it funny numbers. I thought it stood for flight at the time, but it seems... Well, I don't know. It's since been absorbed into another squadron, you know.
So it's number 17F Air Training Corps, and that was at Hendon Grammar
School? No, that was at Enfield Grammar School.
And what did you do? You know, what sort of activity did you do? You joined them in what year?
Can't remember now.
So what did you do?
Well, the main thing I remember doing, once again, we did a bit of drill, of course, which... I quite liked after my time in the Boys' Brigade, because I think I stopped the Boys' Brigade when the war came. But one thing I do remember, we had a flight from Hatfield. So, and I always remember, it was a three-seater plane, pilot and two passengers, and I was sort of shepherded forward with another chap, and I took a quick look at the cockpit, and I thought, I will be courteous and allow him to go in first. So he went into the back seat, and then I went into the passenger seat, which was sort of, I ultimately found out, it became known as Second Dickie. And so being in the front seat, I was allowed to take the control for a couple of minutes, you know, which of course the lad in the back didn't have that opportunity. And strangely enough, I've been up close to a similar plane, so I was able to relive the day.
What else did you do with the ATC? Any other sort of training?
I don't think I did any rifle training. I think it was mainly drill. That I certainly cannot remember.
Now, so, any other instance during the years 41 to 43 before you were called up or volunteered?
Yeah.
Anything else you remember?
Well, I started doing one or two gigs with a local band. So
well,
tell me about that.
How did you get into the band, and what as? Which instrument?
Well, of course, in those days, you know, guys were getting called up, so they took anybody, you know, youngsters and all that. And I'd been playing drums, or side drum, when I was in the boys' brigade, and I'd had a... My dad had bought me a very small kit, and then I managed to get a respectable size kit. And, of course, buses were so infrequent, and I've known my dad to help me walk up from... along the A10 from Church Street, which is, we live around the back, as I said, by the cemetery, up to Southbury Road. And
carrying the drum kit.
Carrying the drum kit, yes.
Now, what was the band you joined? What was it made of?
Billy Lawrence. I think it became a case of who he could get. I remember, once again, it was piano, bass, and I was on drums. And there was always a saxophone player in those days, and perhaps the other odd one or two, and Billy used to stand out front and do the business.
He was a singer, or just the...
No, he was just a band leader.
There's no singer.
And he was a pre-war... The band used to win pre-war Melody Maker contests.
So he was well-known?
In the area.
And it was a professional band?
No, semi-pro.
Semi-pro.
Yeah. We all had our day jobs. Don't give up the day job.
And what was a typical gig like? Where would you play? Or would it be very similar to the dances you'd attended, you know?
Well, yes, to be facetious. They'd get funny names up, like a flannel dance, you know, so you were expected to wear flannels. There were no polyester things in those days. In library halls and places like that. And I think, it was after the war, when I was playing with the same band, I did one at Bart's Hospital.
But, yeah, sticking before, yeah, so you were just sort of doing these varieties. And were you good enough as a drummer for them, really?
Well, they continually book me, so if you get return bookings, you're good enough. Of course, it was very early days. I'd only had my boys' brigade experience behind me, or from the technique side.
Did you rehearse and practice with them?
No.
So it was just you turned up and did it?
We turned up and did it, and I still do.
And did that improve your drumming?
I mean, oh, certainly. Yeah, you gradually get the feel for it.
So that was part that happened. What, anything else happened during those last 2 years before you joined up?
I don't think so. There were other bands playing in the park. That park opposite the police station in Wood Green, they used to have dances, obviously, in the summer. But as I say, I don't really... It's only these little bits that I often think about, you know.